less costly and easier for private companies and smaller entities, it is important that an alternate assurance service is introduced, and therefore I must make it clear that we support that that move from the DTI. Also, Mr. Mamone this morning mentioned that obviously the auditing profession is hugely affected by this legislation and by the changes and the fact that audit is removed from the private company. So obviously our comments would have to be focused on the alternate assurance services that arises as a result of the move, removal of the audit from private companies. And in that sense, it's very important to understand that the RBA is the statutory regulator which acts in the interest of protecting the public. So whatever alternate assurance service is introduced, it's very important that we are comfortable, the committee and the public is comfortable, that it still provides the necessary assurance to the public and to investors. So we will focus in our presentation on the sections in the amendments which links back to the regulations and deal with the competencies of those people, who can do the work, the standards which are important, and the fact that we believe that there should be regulation of these people. I'll go back to something that Mr. Mamone said this morning as well. It is not a lowering of standards, but it's very important that we do have standards, and it's just a different standard. But for the review engagement, we believe that there should be a standard. You also use the word krachtdadigheid, which is important for regulators. And I think yesterday you mentioned the financial crisis. And in the context of the financial crisis and in these situations, it is important that we do have krachtdadige regulators. Otherwise, we will not protect the public and the economy and the interests of the financial investors. We will talk a little bit about the overlapping of legislation again, and I won't go into detail because it has been covered by the National Treasury. And also, in response to the Honourable September's comment this morning about government having to work together, of course we agree that that is the case. And so part of our presentation will deal with how we see the RBA as a statutory regulator working together with the DTI to roll out the implementation of the Companies Act and the regulations. We have therefore engaged with the DTI since the Companies Act has been, the revision to the Companies Act has started. And we had presented a proposal to the DTI, which is up for their consideration. We proposed areas where we thought we could assist, and that is areas that might come through more clearly in the regulations. The reason we did this was because we want to avoid duplication of processes and structures. The RBA has been set up to regulate assurance services, to set standards for assurance services, and the review engagement is an assurance service. We want to avoid further government expenditure, setting up a new regulator or a new body to regulate these reviewers because government is in the process of trying to save costs. And of course, the RBA has been in existence for over 50 years, so there's a wealth of experience and competencies that already exist, and we're offering our assistance to help with the regulation of reviewers should that be required. So then briefly, who is the IRBA? And as I said earlier, it's important to distinguish the IRBA from professional bodies. Professional bodies exist mostly to support their members. We are not a member body. We are the statutory regulator of the auditing profession in South Africa. We are established by an Act of Parliament. We're part of government, and we report to the Minister of Finance. Our mandate is to protect the financial interests of the public. It is not to protect auditors. Again, why I mention our statutory functions is because this is the areas where we believe we might be able to assist the DTI should they so wish. We register auditors, we set the competence requirements for auditors, monitor their CPD compliance, accredit professional bodies, and in the new regulations, we noted yesterday that there is a mention in, I think, section 29 or 30, that refers to the accreditation of professional bodies and that those are the people that will be able to do reviews for certain companies over a certain threshold. We set the auditing and ethics standards according to international best practice. We inspect auditors, investigate and discipline auditors. And the reporting reportable irregularities that Mr. Tomasek referred to this morning was a very important introduction into our Act. The then Minister of Finance felt it was very important that those irregularities are reported to the RBA, and we then on-report that to different regulators. That was important in the context of curbing white-collar crime. We're also a supervisory body for money laundering. So our auditors, who are accountable institutions, we monitor their compliance with the anti-money laundering legislation. South Africa has been rated number one in the world for auditing standards in the current year survey. So we are not only a standard setter that's recognized in Africa, we are an internationally recognized auditing standard setter and regulator. Now, why is the regulation of assurance service important? And this is important, and I have to mention this in the context of our proposals. It ensures the performance of high quality assurance services in the public interest. And as I mentioned earlier, the review engagement is an assurance service. High quality assurance service and reports instills a confidence in our financial markets. Confidence means that investors, whether local or foreign, can place reliance on the financial information on which the assurance provider reports. Investment, of course, stimulates the economy and creates employment. And again, it's important that the reportable irregularities are brought to the attention to the relevant regulators consistently, whichever assurance service is provided. As I said, Sars mentioned that earlier. Then to come to the specific interpretations of the Act, or our comments on specific sections on the Amendment Act, comes from, the first one is in Section 5. It says that if there's an inconsistency between any provision of this Act and a provision of any other national legislation, the Auditing Profession Act prevail. And then in the amendments, there's now, you've introduced a new section, which says except to the extent provided in Section 38. In Section 38, it mentions that despite Section 1 of the Auditing Profession Act, an independent review of a company's annual financial statements does not constitute an audit within the meaning of this Act. Now, we do not believe that the Companies Act can override the principal legislation for the auditing profession. In that, if that was possible, then any other Act can override any definition in the Auditing Profession Act. So we believe that as the primary legislation for auditors, that is where the definition of audit should be. So we recommend in that case that either the definition is removed altogether, or that it defines independent review for the purposes of the Companies Act, but not refer back or try to change the definition in the Auditing Profession Act. The definition of audit, of course, comes back to the same thing, but it is in a different section. Section 1 of the Act has been amended by the substitution of the definition of audit, and then the underlined section has been added in the Amendment Act. Audit has the meaning set out in the Auditing Profession Act, which is quite correct, but does not include an independent review of annual financial statements as contemplated in Section 30. The Companies Act, again, cannot define audit or amend the definition in the Auditing Profession Act. So, as I mentioned earlier, we recommend that the definition is removed, be made consistent with the Auditing Profession Act definition, or that the DTI introduce their own definition of the independent review. Now, in the amendment bill, they refer back to areas which will appear in the regulations, and the importance of the independent review to us comes from, the important sections that I come from the independent review of financial statements, which has been introduced, is that we believe that the nature must be clearly defined. It's important to know exactly what this independent review entails, otherwise the public won't understand the assurance they are being given. Remember that our comments are strictly for the purposes of protecting the public and for helping them to understand what type of assurance they are getting, and they have to be clear on the level of assurance that they are receiving. An audit provides a certain level of assurance, and if that is going to be replaced by another form of assurance, it must be clearly understood by the public. The competence of those people doing the review must clearly be understood, and it must be defined, otherwise there will be people performing the review that might not be appropriately qualified to do so. Currently, I think the regulations mention that anybody listed as an accounting officer in the Close Corporations Act can perform this review, and we disagree with that because not all of those people are accountants and not all of them have the qualifications and the competencies to do this work. An appropriate standard has to be drafted. If there's not an appropriate standard, you won't have consistent level of work being done, and there will be no measure against which the public can measure, a benchmark against which the public can measure performance by the independent reviewer. And then, of course, again, the report of irregularity section, which disappears when you have a review instead of an audit, because our Act specifically says that you have to be the auditor of a company to be able to report irregularities. If you're no longer the auditor, you're an independent reviewer, you don't have that obligation anymore. And in terms of the reports that we have received over the last 4 or 5 years, about 80% of the reportable irregularities come from auditors of private companies which won't require an audit anymore. So all of those reports will now disappear. And if government needs to curtail crime and at least have early warning signals for where crime might exist, then we believe that this is an important provision that will no longer be applicable. But of course, it can be taken into account in some way. The nature of the independent review, I already mentioned that it's important that the public understands what the level of assurance is that they get. If there's confusion in any report, in the reports issued by the independent reviewers, then there'll be confusion in the market, and it will certainly impact on the efficiency of our markets. Currently, I think our markets are operating well under the understanding of what an audit is and the reliance that can be placed on audits and auditors' reports. The competencies of independent reviewers. Again, in Section 37 of the Companies Act, it says the minister can make regulations prescribing the professional qualifications of persons who may conduct reviews, and we believe that it shouldn't only be the professional qualifications, but that it should go further than that to define the competencies of those people, because you can have a professional qualification but not necessarily the competency to carry out the assurance engagement. And in fact, you might have heard often that professional bodies maintain that as a member of IFAC, they can provide certain assurance services. This is not the case. IFAC has a specific standard for assurance providers. So accountants might be members of IFAC, but if you want to do assurance work, you have to comply with a specific education standard of IFAC. And so if we do draft competencies for independent reviewers, we need to take into account these requirements. As I mentioned earlier, we're not talking about a lower standard in the sense that standards disappear, but we do see it as a lesser standard because if the independent reviewer had to comply with the auditing standards, that would entail a lot more work and a lot more cost to the client. So obviously we're looking at a lower, less work that must be performed by the auditor. And what we do know is that there must be a basic understanding. If you are going to provide assurance, there must be a basic understanding of assurance service. Now, we're not saying that only auditors can provide this service, but there must be a basic understanding. And this is very different to an accounting officer that currently provides accounting services to a closed corporation. So we have to be very careful when we say that anybody that's an accounting officer can provide this assurance service. The Act also refers to ISRE 2400. It's on the International Auditing Standards Set agenda for next week, and they will be approving ISRE 2400 very soon. In fact, it goes out in December on exposure. We are quite happy that that is a standard that we can refer to, because it does allow any country to add additional reporting considerations which is included in their law or in their regulation. So we can do that. And we can use that as a basis for drafting a review standard specifically for South Africa. Remember that ISRE 2400 is still an assurance engagement. We also propose, when the regulations are finalized, and I know that they've been issued, and then we'll comment on them, maybe some of our comments have already been taken into account, because we prepared this before the regulations were issued. At the moment, there's no provision in the Companies Act or the Amendment Act for the regulation of reviewers and the protection of reviewers. For example, there's protection for auditors, which talks about their appointment, their removal. There is no such provision in the Amendment Act for reviewers. I said that the latest regulations may provide the required solution, and then I referred to Section 29, I think, in the recently published regulations. Oversight over assurance services, whether it's audit or reviews, increases confidence from investors and the public. If they know that there's a check on those people performing those services, they'll feel more comfortable. And we propose, though, that there should be regulation and monitoring at a different level than for auditors. So we're certainly not saying that reviewers should be regulated at the same level, but there should be some regulation and monitoring of the services that they provide. And if you look at the recommendations in the European Union Green Paper that's just been issued, it makes it very clear that if there's any alternate assurance services in any country, that it should still be subject to some form of regulation. So if we move away from that, we will be moving away from international best practice. I've covered reportable irregularities, and I mentioned earlier that it's a specific requirement in the Auditing Profession Act, provides an early warning signal to entities such as SARS, Cipro, the FIC, FSB, and even the police. And those reports can only be provided by an auditor. So somehow, if we can say that those reports must also be provided by independent reviewers. And of course, if those reviewers are registered with the RBA, for example, we can easily subject them to those same reporting requirements. And there are also heavy penalties for auditors who do not report reportable irregularities. So our recommendations, finally, in closing, is that we must have robust engagement. The DTI must have robust engagement with the parties when finalizing. I'll now say finalizing the regulations because they've been issued. Draft regulations have been issued. And then our proposal, again, as I mentioned, has been made to assist the DTI with specific areas. Drafting of an independent review standard, defining competencies for independent reviewers, accreditation of professional institutes whose members can perform these reviews, and then the regulation of independent reviewers at a different level of regulation. And the proposal that we provided to the DTI also had a timeline and a specific approach. The underpinning philosophy really comes back in our proposal to the DTI. We make it quite clear that we embrace government's initiatives to build and enhance skills for the wider community, consistent with the GEAR strategy of government. We do admit that we need a competitive, fast-growing economy to create sufficient jobs. Globally, again, it was mentioned earlier, G20 supports growth across the globe. And our approach is based on a partnership with the DTI and also to work with any other stakeholders in taking our proposal forward with the DTI. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's given us the opportunity to engage. I appreciate it. Over to the committee, please. Honourable Kotsi, Honourable Smala, Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like on amendment in section 5, just want to check with the presenters. They raised that they want some definition to be removed. I think it's, on section 5. My question is perhaps did they raise this in their interaction with the DTI and what has been the response?
Thank you. Yes, Chairperson. I think there was a whole lot of positive recommendations concerning towards the regulations part of the bill or the act. And I know it's only been most recently put forward electronically. I just wanted to understand if they actually had a clear look at the new regulations as it was submitted. And
Thank you very much, Honourable Smalley. Honourable Khadebe.
Well, Honourable Chairperson, I think the presenter made an issue about the regulation of reviewers. Yeah. And then he also acknowledged that they might not necessarily be accountants. So, on their side, what is the minimum qualification they expect from a reviewer?
Yeah.
And then when coming to the issue of the regulation, do they want those people to be some sort of a professional counsel or whatever? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Indeed. Yes, I was just looking at the company's regulations, which came on the website, I think Monday night or earlier than that, I think. Just to see what regulations did apply in this regard. Have you had the opportunity of looking at the regulations? Yes. No, just briefly in respect of the points you raised. Right. The other question I wondered if you're in a position to respond to with respect to auditing and the independent reviewer, etc. as you indicated, your institution is primarily responsible for that area, as it were. Now, you would have, I'm sure, done a bit of research in this area, and you'd be able to tell us, I hope, as the Independent Regulatory Board for Auditors, is this auditing of statements, is that the only option used by countries, other countries? Or are there variations on a theme, as it were? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, to the committee. The first question on the definition of audit, yes, we did engage with the DTI. Again, when we saw the amendments, that is when we responded immediately and advised the DTI through the National Treasury that we weren't happy with the fact that audit was defined in the Companies Act. So yes, we did engage with the DTI. The Amendment Act also makes it quite clear that they put through some of the amendments as a basis for setting up the regulations, and I think maybe the amendment that DTI did put through to the definition of audit was in fact to set up the regulations, but still we disagree with the amendment of the definition. I think one of the members asked whether we saw the regulations. Yes, we did, and we studied section 26 to 29 last night when we were aware of it. And indeed, one of the sections do address our concerns. In fact, there's one paragraph in the regulations which says specifically that if a company scores over a certain number of points, that they would be required that the review must be performed by individuals registered with the RBA, or by individuals who belong to a body accredited by the RBA. And that gave us some comfort. Of course, it doesn't talk about regulation of reviewers, but it does at least be comfortable that when it is a company that approaches a public interest entity, and I'm not talking about a real public interest entity as defined because they have to be audited, I'm talking about that threshold which brings the review into place, but we at least have the comfort that it will be performed by people that are regulated by IRBA. Honourable Khadebi mentioned that I said that the people do not have to be accountants. What I actually said was that they don't have to be auditors. Yeah, they don't have to be auditors, and they could be accountants, but it doesn't mean that anybody that's got an accounting qualification can do this work. The skills that I think they should have, which is identified in IS 8 of IFAC, deals with the competence requirements to perform assurance services. And then to answer the chairman's question, IRBA is responsible for assurance, for regulating assurance services. Certainly other countries have alternate assurance service, and the ISRE 2400 that I referred to is such an alternate. And the International Federation of Accountants is also busy developing papers on alternate assurance services. I think the DTI is moving in the right direction to have such a service, but it cannot be a service that is unregulated. Thank you, Chair.
Are there any other questions from the committee in this regard or comment? Did you want to add something?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just the in response to Honourable Radebe's question, the Close Corporation Act currently identifies 7 different institutes or professional bodies that could provide those services, and amongst those are institutions that are not, or professionals who are not, accountants. And the concern is a question of understanding verification services, audit evidence and underpinnings that allow you to express that, plus an understanding of the accounting frameworks that need to be, there needs to be an acceptable financial reporting framework for either an audit or a review opinion to be expressed. And that requires people with a knowledge and understanding in that area.
Yes, I just want to add one comment. You know, in one's own experience with the auditors, often all they add is a signature. Well, somebody else, even a bookkeeper, has done the work. We all know that. We all know that. That's a fact. And I sometimes wondered what the monetary value is then of that signature. It's an enormous amount when you consider what the poor bookkeeper or accountant gets. I always thought that that was a bit of an anomaly myself. But hopefully, we're looking, as you say, in addressing this, but given the, I think the you've raised the issue that, yes, we do possibly need to ensure that some form of assurance is there and so on and so forth, which, yes, I see, you know, we can always look at in regulations. Now, the committee has not had the opportunity to make a thorough study, so I don't want to say we've thoroughly studied the regulations in this regard. But we do appreciate your input, very efficient, see your efficiency on the time management thereof. And the committee secretary, Mr. Herman, will, if we have any other clarifications or queries, come back to you. We also allowed you to give that little preamble because I, for one, was not all that aware of your organisation or institution, and it did certainly clarify things for us. Thank you very much.
Chair, just a final comment. Sandy is actually the technical director of the RBA. I think you mentioned ACCA in the beginning.
And I corrected myself with my poor eyesight, noticing that that was just a mistake there because it was added in writing rather than in type. Thank you very much. So, members, you're ready to go and relieve your hunger pangs. And I don't know, I believe Mark's dining room is open. I'm just clarifying that because at this time, you know, the 1st of December. Right, I certainly hope it is. I also know that there are some changes to the committee, attendance. Some people have long-standing medical appointments which we can't overlook, and those need to be addressed as well. But for those of us who don't have those commitments, we do need to come back.
But as today is one of the significant days in the history of the Republic,